Engagement doesn't have to be a business KPI. It has to be a human KPI in a way. You know, it has to be a metric that tells us that people come to our product because it's useful for them.
Hey friends, welcome back to Product Table Podcast. If you are new here, my name is Elvis and I am product manager based in Latvia. And on this podcast, we explore ways how to get into the product management, discover strategies, techniques and tools that help us to become a better product manager. I am inviting top class people behind incredible software and hardware products that solve our daily challenges to have meaningful talks. And today, I'm really delighted to have Josh Morales as a guest on Product Table Podcast. And Josh is a senior product researcher at Hotjar, the tool that empowers users to gather information about how their website or app is being used. And of course, one of the important things that Josh is really super cool is he reads a lot of books, and he's really amazing book lover. Welcome on the show, Josh. How are you feeling today, and from where are you calling us?
Hey Elvis, how are you? Thanks for having me. I'm calling from Barcelona, so it's a pleasure for me to be here.
Yeah, super cool. Feeling really, really good today, and especially as we have a topic which is really maybe interesting for product managers, and many people maybe are questioning what is like product research, and because they know maybe, oh yeah, we have design, we have, you know, user interfaces, user research, but what is like in the end the product research and what steps are there. We will try to explore it today. But before we jump into this particular conversation, I mean, I usually ask my guests those cool icebreakers. And especially during the lockdown, I think many people have started to use different tools, technologies, apps, you know. And I would like to know, what are your three most lockdown apps that are you currently using in your daily life?
Sure, that's a very good question. As you were saying, like as everyone, I've changed a little bit my habits when it comes to digital consumption. And like one app that I found myself using a lot lately is Freeletics, because you know, here in Barcelona, the gym situation is not pretty stable. They keep closing and opening them, so you cannot really rely on them. So yeah, I've been practicing sports indoor, and that's an app that I'm enjoying a lot. Another one related to that is Nutrition by Freeletics. Again, and this helps you, you know, like now that we are home more time, you have more time to cook, or if you want to cook, at least you have the chance to spend it in this way. So I'm using their app for cooking as well. And maybe another app that I've started using is Clubhouse, which we're experimenting it today with, and I'm trying to follow there some people that I usually follow on other social platforms, and try to basically understand what is these all about. And yeah, enjoying it so far.
Yeah, super cool. Yeah, today we are definitely enjoying the Clubhouse into some new heights, because it's to be honest, it's really hard. You know, Clubhouse is something for free conversations. It's maybe not for podcasters, because like now we are like launching and recording the podcast on different platform, also having the in parallel Clubhouse, which is interesting experience. So, but on this experience moment, right? So we will talk about product management a lot, and what those two like words, PM or product management, like gives immediate association to you when you hear those words in your life.
Yeah, for me, PM, like a PM means enablement, you know, like you are the final person that is accountable for making things happen. So you have to feel responsible for what you're doing. This is not to put pressure on PMs or anything. It's just what I think that should be their ultimate goal in their minds, right? Which is, if we have a plan and we need to follow the plan and something is not going according to the plan, they should be able to make it happen. You know, like the show must go on, especially those days where we move fast, you know, and in agile environments where there are many, many things that
needs quick experimentation, and there are a lot of changes in direction, which is completely normal if you want to survive. I think PMs are the ones who should drive all these decisions. And of course, they should take most of the decisions based on evidence if they want to succeed.
Well, I think every single time I hear some incredible definition that I would like to, you know, put additional product management page where all definitions would be stored. It's actually a good idea for my upcoming website to have, you know, definition page of every single person. Really like that. But you know, you're still in the product, but your role is a little bit different. And what fascinated me during like our pre-call before the podcast is actually, and also like your LinkedIn says it a lot, that you have a bachelor degree in different sphere, which is like sociology. And I think and also people here would like to really hear the story. How did you start it in sociology and ended up being like, you know, product researcher? And what parallel common sense logic is there in place? Sure. So maybe you can share with us.
Sure. Like, first thing I would like to say is that there is no right track for becoming a user researcher, right? Like, you can see folks coming from different areas, like journalism, you know, like criminology, whatever, like what have you. And I'm not an exception in that sense. Like, I've always been interested in technology, and actually during my degree in sociology, I took many of the optional subjects related to technology because I could really see myself working on that area, but I never thought about becoming a user researcher. It was actually later on when I decided to study a master, which was called Cognitive Systems and Interactive Media, where I really liked like the idea of becoming a UX designer or someone that is, you know, like designing the experience of the user in any part, you know, like in any of the steps, whether it's putting together the UI or thinking about the information architecture. That's why I started like in a job that I think it's pretty crucial, you know, like for people who's starting in this world, to start in a job that enables you to, or exposes you to different projects, different clients. I think that an agency work when you're starting is perfect, especially when it comes to research, because you can understand like different needs, you can tackle different projects, you can do different stuff, and then you can see yourself more interested in some topics and less in others. And then that's exactly what happened to me. You know, like I joined a very traditional consultancy, so you can picture myself with a tie, you know, and suits and all the things. But we were part of the R&D department, and we had no productive objective in there to say so. Like, what I mean here is we didn't have like products or projects that we had to work on. It was more on, hey guys, like, just come up with stuff and we'll try to sell it, right? So it was fun so we experimented with augmented reality, we experimented with virtual reality as well, interactive mirrors, so all sorts of artifacts. But then it's like, as I was saying, like tackling these different projects, I realized that not only I enjoyed the most the research side of it, but I also found myself, you know, like pretty good for the experience I had, like, you know, conducting interviews, surveys and stuff like that. And then in hindsight, I can see that this is because I actually studied, you know, research techniques in my degree. So it's when you start reading and see like that social sciences in general are pretty good at forming new researchers, because you study a lot of not just techniques but also like human behavior frameworks and stuff like that, right? And yeah, that's how I got into research. I had a chance to join HP by then after that experience in the consultancy world. And in there it was 100% research, you know, like the first day they handle us the keys of the usability lab, so you can picture a huge usability lab for huge printers. And yeah, they were like, here you go, you know how these things work, right? So from there we made a nice job, I would say, from our side to make people understand the value of not just validating ideas, but just also exploring new ideas, you know, that the team can come up with and guiding the roadmap and the business decisions due to the findings that we got. And yeah, like lately I switched pretty shortly again to an agency because I felt that I have consolidated a lot of learning. So I was reading a lot at that point about a lot of literature about research, and I wanted to try out new things that were not possible in HP. And then I decided to join a small company, an agency again, where I was basically able to do everything that I always wanted to do and experiment with research techniques, how to tackle projects. So I was defining which was like matching basically the methods to the questions we were getting from clients. And that was fun. But I felt that it was, you know, like it felt difficult to, so there is one part in research, which is continuity, you know, like when you work in an agency, it's difficult to see how things evolve. So I was missing that part. And I also had the chance, like the opportunity to join N26 at that point. And that's what I did. And the main reason was because there was a huge and awesome team of researchers there. And I had a blast during my time in N26. But yeah, like startup, hyper growth, you know, like very, very difficult to settle, you know, like objectives and work in it for a long time. So that was not what I was expecting in a sense. So yeah, and like some time ago, I had the time to join Hodger, where I'm the first researcher in there, and we are growing by the way. So if you want to apply, just follow the link that you can find on my profile on LinkedIn, for example. And yeah, like very happy so far setting the processes and tools and how we do research the Hodger way here in this company.
Well, you tackled amazing like journey how you transform, but what I really heard and I think also a little bit thought through is that, so you say that the agency work actually give you more freedom to experiment with the user research, right? So which in other sense, like the big companies did not, like they have the frameworks that they, you know, they say that we will use this and not different. And so I think this is also one maybe good addition to people who are just trying to kick their careers in product, actually to join those like startups, small companies that are not full of you know frameworks, you know, all buzzwords that are in the company. And yeah, I think this is super cool. How do you think?
Yeah, like I think that it's very valuable, as I was saying, like when you're starting, it's very valuable to have someone who knows more than you do, because you can basically learn from that person, a mentor if you wish, or someone who has been there for longer than you are. And I think that in terms of, you know, like in terms of learning about yourself and your interests and growing faster, I think that indeed an agency or a design studio offers, you know, like this possibility and boosts in a way the pace in which you learn stuff, because you're exposed to all sorts of customers, all sorts of projects, and you have to be very adaptable. And yeah, you're normally very constrained by time and money, because obviously no client wants to pay you more or give you more time for a project, right? So that's a really nice onboarding, let's say, to this world, if you have the chance to do so when you're starting. I think it's great. Then in the long run, I personally prefer product teams, because it's like, you know, more people working on a topic and you can see the progress and you can see the impact that you're bringing to the team, and you can build a, you know, like longer relationships and collaborate with people, which I think is very important for a researcher.
Yeah, so maybe, you know, what I was thinking, not many product teams actually or organizations are having this stack of, you know, product researchers. You know, they maybe use different words for that, you know, some business analysts, they also like conducting some kind of research. But in like bigger companies, yeah, there are dedicated product researcher, user researchers. And so maybe you can like just simply introduce what actually job it is and who is the man behind every man and or woman behind this all research. So I mean the product researcher, and we can discuss it more maybe at this point.
Sure. Like, first I'd like to mention, like, what you were commenting, I think it's interesting. Like, there is a lot of different words to name what we do, right? And this means that, from my point of view, that the discipline is not really consolidated in a way, right? Like, we're still figuring out, like, are we user researchers? Are we design researchers? Are we product researchers? Are we UX researchers? For me, it's all about the same. Like, I think that the most important is to not build a wall between what we do and what others do, because eventually we're in the same boat, you know. Like, ultimately the mission of a researcher, from my point of view, is to provide the foundational knowledge to take better decisions. So in a way, what you're doing is to reduce the risk of the decisions that the company is taking. And that's something everyone likes, you know. No one wants to be wrong in a way, and no one wants to waste money or take the wrong decisions. So if you start with that foundations and you build from that, I think the idea of the role of a researcher, what should do is to not only look for answers and answers to, but to also frame the right questions, right? So to be able to understand what's the current situation of the teams, where is the gap of knowledge, what are the opportunities, and to run research in a collective way, you know, in a collaborative way, if you wish, because that's the important thing. Like, I believe that research is, you know, by nature, it's challenging. It's challenging in the sense that you're bringing to the table new information that people won't believe because they have been believing a different kind of story for a long time, right? And you're saying, no, this is not how things work. So the first thing that you will face is opposition. You know, like, the reaction is not going to be good unless you build the trust and you build the relationships that with your team that gives you the trust and the flexibility to conduct the research in your way or the way you think it's better, because you're actually the expert on that field. But without, as I was saying, without drawing a line between what you're doing and what others are doing, quite the opposite. Everyone in the organization should do research. And as a researcher, you're the one who should be running research, but you should be the one also who is helping others run their own, right? So there are different kinds of research, and I don't want to go into detail, but you have the tactical kind of research, which is more of usability testing and all sorts of validations, let's say. Which I think that it's fine that if researchers do that, but I think it's a good entry point for people who are not really familiarized with research, and they can run their own with pretty low risk, and then you can help them and support. And then there is more strategic research, right, where you have like the big questions living in there, and that's maybe where you need someone who is more who's got more experience on the topic. And not just on the topic, but also on the techniques that you will use, right? But yeah, that's more or less how I see the role of a researcher.
And one fun question, like, you know, researcher gives me association that there are certain labs where you're just conducting the research. Is it the same like for you, or how you imagine this like profession when you started?
Yeah, like, I've been in two companies who got their own lab, and you're right, like, when you think about researchers, you might think of a white coat, you know, science, maybe, you know, like, academia, and that's completely normal because that's what it is, right? Like, it's not what it is, it's what it's coming from, right? So we're basically, we borrowed some techniques and methods from academia, and we're using it, right? So it's normal that sometimes we want to copy too much of them, right? So that's why labs exist, and they were used a lot in the past, I believe. But I don't believe in labs. Like, as I said, I experienced them firsthand, and I think that they are very convenient for the researcher, because you make people come in and it's your environment and you know how things work and you can help your team seeing it, etc. But with the new technologies, there is no need of bringing people in. Plus, you're missing a lot of information if you are making people come to your place instead of you going to
to their place, right? Or to give them a visit and see what's their environment, how do they behave naturally, if possible, you know. I think it's a waste of resources. Like if I had to build an office today for doing research, I don't think I will build a lab on it.
Yeah, so modern research is not about labs. It's about, you know, the most effective way how you deliver. And, you know, in my business studies, we had a lot of, you know, also strategical courses. We had also, you know, a research like a statistical course. And what was emphasized always there, something about, you know, market research. And correct me if I'm wrong, but market research and product research, they are not the same. They kind of complement each other, but they are totally different.
Yeah, like that's completely the way it is, I believe. Like the main difference, or how I think about it, is market research, let's say, is the discipline in which traditionally companies have relied on to run research. And the objective of market research is to bring the product closest to a product market fit, right? Because what you're trying to do is to position yourself, to create a brand, to, you know, like ultimately what you're trying to do is to sell your product to the right people, right? Then what's similar with product research or user research is that we are using a lot of methods that are similar, like surveys, interviews mainly, right? But the purpose is completely different. So what we're trying to achieve from product research is not product market fit, but product mental model fit is how I like to see it, right? And this means that we're more interested not at the high level of demographics and like, you know, more firmographic and all this kind of more quantitative high level data, but we're more interested in this, in the stories behind people, in the behaviors, in why people do what they do, right? Not just the what. And we're using that information not to sell more products. Of course, if you reach a product mental model fit, you will be able to sell more products because that's a consequence, right? But that's not the objective. The objective is to help people and to make things more usable and enjoyable. And that's the main difference. Of course, as I was saying, techniques are practically identical in most cases, but the usage are different.
Yeah, it's started to be clear, you know, because I was also like thinking, even like before preparing to this interview, that those are something like, you know, similar, but they are so different in this essence. And I think I like that point that you said that it's about, you know, product research is about stories rather than like, you know, some data and like which is for market and also behavior. And we were discussing also today one interesting another case on. I mentioned that I watched a lot of a series from Netflix in, you know, for Spain market, and you mentioned I think one amazing book maybe you can share with us as you are like book lover also.
Sure, yeah, like I mentioned the one, it's I think it's Irresistible, and I think it's by Adam Alter, even though we didn't agree on that, but I think that's the case. Yeah, it's a really nice book that tells about the consequences of the apps and products and services, like digital products and services we're creating in a way. So yeah, it's really interesting, the point that the author is making, because we have to be more aware, you know, of the consequences of what we're doing. Because if we just follow a business purpose on what we're doing, we'll be more susceptible to add, you know, dark patterns, and not just dark patterns, but we'll try to optimize to an extent that people won't have wheel of choice in a way. You know, like if you're tricking the mind, if you're using what we know about neuroscience and psychology to make people do what you want them to do for your own benefit, then yeah, like you're creating people who might get hooked to your product in the right direction, right?
And I think that's a current of thought that it's, I remember like that book that was written by an AI in that direction, like that was, it's called Hooked, and everyone is reading, you know, when they're starting. If I can say so, don't read it, you know, like don't do that to your products. Try to get a different angle on how you're building your product, and try to help people, not make them hook to your product. You know, like engagement doesn't have to be a business KPI. It has to be a human KPI in a way, you know, it has to be a metric that tells us that people come to our product because it's useful for them, not because they are hooked on it, you know, and can't stop using. So yeah, sorry Nir, but I prefer the second book you have. So if people have to read a book about Nir Eyal, I would recommend the second one instead of the first.
Yeah, I think you highlighted one also important point that I heard also on one of discussions in Clubhouse, and actually I think Clubhouse is currently also like kind of hooking our attention, right? So we are spending time there, and you know, but in the end, the product researcher also, it's like, I think it's not only the business things that we are like now thinking, we are thinking of some ethical, social concerns that this product might happen. And so what are you saying is that the product researcher should also be aware of this already started, like starting from the point zero, right?
Yeah, everyone working on products should be aware of that. You know, like you're taking decisions that might affect, like we shape technologies, but then technology shapes us back, right? And we have to be aware of that. And we're taking decisions on daily basis that will affect how people behave. So we're basically modifying the current state of people's lives. So next time that there is another great book about this that is Ruined by Design by Mike Monteiro, which is excellent in my opinion, and it's all about ethical issues in design and accountability, and it's excellent. So I really recommend it about this topic. But I think he's right. Like his point is, let's stop taking decisions as a designers and researchers and product managers that only benefit the business and don't have, you know, the person into account, because we're calling ourselves user centered or customer centered, but this doesn't mean learning from the customer or the user to take advantage of it, you know, in a negative way for them. It means, okay, we are here to help and we can try to make your life bit better, you know, and exponentially and potentially even the world if possible.
Yeah, totally agree. And taking into consideration that at least, like, you know, modern companies, big tech companies, they have inside researchers, they have user research team, but I would like to give you, like, you know, the case study and maybe see on the way how would you solve this this particular sure. case. I think like this is a real case for all small companies that having just like limited tech power. So the case study would be like following that. Imagine we have like small company, like 5-10 people working, maybe 2-3 developers, other like team is marketing, and maybe product is something about, you know, marketing automatization for you know, other sales companies, mm-hmm. let's say. And what the CEO is saying, and basically maybe working together with the team, that the product is actually not going well. But what is the main reason? Also, one of the important points is that there is no, like, you know, designer in the team, because they outsourced the designer in the first place at some point, and now they are seeing that all metrics are going down. The product is like not used, but like sales efforts are really high, and CEO is coming to the, you know, to the team and saying, so guys, please give me some ideas, we need to reshape our product, right? So the question is this something, maybe like you can answer, how would you solve this in perspective of like CEO or the team, and would you involve a product researcher at this step?
Sure, let's see what we can do to solve this. What I would say is, first of all, I disagree with that they don't have a designer. All of them are designers, right? So whether you're aware or not, you're designing,
you know, whatever you're putting into in front of the customer, and they are taking that decision. So first thing is to be aware of that. So the decisions are being taken maybe by someone who is not a designer, but it's designing. So that's the first step. Then would I bring a researcher to the equation? Absolutely, yes, but that's not realistic. You know, like that's not how things work. If you don't have a designer, you won't probably have a researcher before. Because what you actually need to do is to start collecting like all sorts of data that influences current decision making, and do like a sort of audit, you know, and say, okay, guys, we're standing here because X, Y, Z, and what we need to go to do is this, and the direction has to be a mix, like, you know, has to be something that is decided by leadership, but also with enough flexibility for the people who are individual contributors to take their own decisions because they have the domain knowledge, right? And then once you have some objectives, so I'm talking about OKRs here basically, and once you have your objectives and you have to reach certain objectives and you have to figure out how to do it, I would say that the need to do research will emerge naturally because there is no other way. Like whether you start checking out what's out there and trying to understand your users, or you are guided by hunches and non-evidence, and this will, unless you're really 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 lucky, this will end up in people not adopting your product because it doesn't fit their needs, right? So once this, you are in that stage where you realize that you need research, what I would say is, well, start building a team that it's focused on the experience, right? So you need experienced designers, you need researchers, you need people who should take care of how things are written. You need all these kind of people, right? But most importantly, you need to build a culture that is really user-centered. And to do so, there is no best thing to do than sitting in front of users, talking to them, learning, you know, and realizing that you were so wrong, and that's fine. Like, that's completely normal to be wrong if you've never talked to the people who is actually using your product. So it's planting this seed of curiosity in a way, you know, and breaking a little bit the conception that we have to be right and we have to have answers. It's fine to have questions, and it's fine to explore those questions to have more questions. And there will be a point where you'll have too many questions for a development team or even designers to tackle. So you will need someone that it's there to answer those questions, or at least to run the research in a more let's say standardized way and getting those questions. So that's when the moment will come. But I think it's completely natural. And what you cannot expect is that if there is a situation like what you were describing, you will bring the product researcher and everything will be solved, right? I hope that will be the thing, but I don't think that's how things work. So it's a process you need to follow. And at some point, if you're doing the things in the correct way, let's say, I think the need will emerge naturally.
Well, thanks for, I was not even like ready for such interesting answer, but what I also heard is, and I was like thinking, so is it like real situation when, for example, CEO goes immediately regarding the product decisions to product researcher, or he collects both of guys, product manager and product researcher together? At least maybe you can share some also like your experience, how this process actually ended up like being, let's say, I am CEO or founder or I don't know, product manager, and here's your paper, product researcher, I need this research by Monday. So how usually this like process looks, maybe you can share like your real life examples.
Yeah.
By like not saying any company or etc.
Sure. So yeah, you're totally right. Like I think that's the what they call the HIPPO, right? Like highest individual paid on the room. It's very common that they take the decisions because they are supposed to do so, not because they really want or are prepared to do so. And it's pretty common to receive requests for doing research as a researcher, right? But I think that if you're a researcher and you only take those requests, you're acting as an internal consultancy in a way. You know, like, you're there to offer your expertise, you're taking the projects, you're planning them and delivering, and that's it. But you're not, you're missing, I think, very important parts of the role of research, which is you eventually will become someone who's got unique knowledge about all the areas of the product. And you will be unique in that, because no other person is going to spend the time on trying to figure out what the heck is going on in different teams, you know, and trying to come up with the big questions. So I think you cannot just get requests of the what will potentially be research efforts, but you will, you also have to be proactive and propose your own stuff. And of course, you cannot, as everything, you can not join a company and say, okay, this is the research I'm going to conduct, and that's it. It's better to start with those quick wins, you know, and say, okay, maybe the CEO or someone else has asked me to do so. You don't have to, like, one thing is that they tell you what they want to explore, and the other thing is that they tell you how they want it to do. So I think that the how should be always under your responsibility. The what, if that's a legit question, it's fine that they propose it. Maybe you can reframe it and make it like better research question, whatever. But as I was saying, like, sometimes it's about understanding the context and not following blindly, like, because the CEO comes to your desk and or sends you a Slack those days, I don't think there will be many people coming to desks. With a research plan, you have to, you know, like, be critical and check it out and understand why is this a thing, where is this coming from, what are the expectations, and again, involving as many people as possible to, you know, be aligned on the decisions that are being taken, informed, and yeah, like, I wouldn't be afraid to say no to those requests if I think it's the best thing, because actually, like, that's actually what I'm hired for. You know, like, if you are hiring me for doing research and you're telling me what to do, then you don't need the researcher. You need someone who executes whatever, you know? But I believe that if they hire you, it's because they want your opinion on things. And if you don't give the opinion, you're actually harming your reputation even and the company, you know? Like, you're not taking care of the standards of research in your company. So, yeah. I think that, and most importantly, if you create the habit of you go to the researcher and the researcher will take the decision, and the researcher will execute on whatever you're presenting to them, that's what you're getting. You know, like, people will do more of what you do more and less of what you do less. So if you educate people to come to you and tell you what to do, that's what people will do, because you're teaching them basically to do so. But if you set the expectations and you interact with them differently and you discuss with them and you make them understand why you think should be done in a different way and what else are you working on, and you include them on your projects, step by step, you'll have the freedom, let's say, to choose. Like, actually, people will come to you and say, hey, Josh, what do we, or hey, whoever is the researcher, what do we have to do in here, right? Instead of telling you, hey, we need to do this.
Yeah, thanks, Josh, for explanation. I was also, like, thinking and referring, you know, this if you remember, like, some 20 years ago, the product managers also were just, like, executing the things that actually someone has told them. But it changes, you know. Product managers and product owners now are more responsible on that product, and actually they are driving this product. And I believe the same, like, at some point will happen to every single company that has user researchers or product researchers or whatever researchers, because this is super cool that they are doing the great work on the research part. You know, they are trying to answer all the questions that from the, you know, strategic management are coming, and this is super cool. Let's jump to another interesting part that I was, like, also hearing from you in the beginning of conversation. You mentioned that you are the very, 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 very first man standing in the product research at Hotjar, and this gives me another question. what are you doing there? Are you like building something new, super cool inside of it? And also maybe you can share if you are hiring some people there.
Sure. Like, as I was saying, like, I think the need of Hotjar to hire a product researcher was exactly what I was explaining before. It emerged naturally, where everyone on the team was doing research. But at some point you have those questions that don't fit on PMs and designers' agenda anymore. So you have to, you know, like start hiring people who dedicate their time to that. Funnily enough, I haven't run much research since I joined Hotjar, because I'm basically trying to build, as I was saying, like the Hotjar way of doing research, right? So I'm taking the five main parts of any kind of research, which is planning, recruiting, interacting, analyzing, and sharing the results, and trying to create a process for that and the tools that will be used, right? Because as I was saying, my approach could be, wow, we have all these questions that need an answer at some point. So I will have a backlog of questions and I will start conducting my own research and providing the answers. And that will be okay, I guess. But I think that if we invest the time now in building a process that everyone in the organization can follow when running research, and it's easy to recruit, it's easy to interact with users because you feel prepared, it's easy to analyze and to share information, then more and more people will run their own research, right? And then those kind of more validation or more squad oriented type of research will be conducted by people who are not researchers necessarily, right? And this will allow us researchers to tackle like more strategic questions or more high level questions, which is actually the kind of questions that no one is ever going to take care of if the researcher is not there, because there is no time, like there is no actual time, it's impossible, right? So yeah, and as you were saying, we're growing the team precisely for that, because at this stage we have a pretty stable process, let's say, that we can start leveraging. And now what we want is to have more resources, more people able to execute, you know, to run research and to start uncovering the answer of those questions that we always think about. So yeah, that's what I've been doing.
Thanks for answer. I was, you know, the Hotjar is, I think, amazing example of, you know, I used to say in previous podcasts that many companies transform their, you know, their products or their like habits, how they are doing the things, you know, during the lockdown, working remotely especially. But for Hotjar, this was, I think, never the case, because they worked in, like, I think starting from the ground zero, right? Working remotely. And what I really like is, I think, one of the core values that the Hotjar is bringing to, you know, to the world is that you are obsessed over your users. And this is, I think, super important, that you need to focus on your users rather than, you know, those highest person paid opinions, as you mentioned.
Yeah, I think that's one of the main criteria. Like, if you can choose, you know, to join a company that is already, you know, it's have this user-centric mindset already, that's, you know, like something very good as a researcher, because otherwise you will spend a long time convincing people of the value of research, right? And this means that you won't be able to invest that much time in actually doing research. And you have to fight for resources, you will have to fight for being heard, to be on the meetings that you think you should be. But if you join a company that already sees the needs of research and had it embedded in their own values, you were saying obsessing our users is one of our core values. Well, things get easier in that sense, right? Like, you don't have to convince anyone, you just need to do your work and everything should go according to the expectations. And that's very, very, very cool.
Super, super thanks. And like just moving to the disclosure part, you know, in the beginning I mentioned that you are, you know, book lover. Can I call you book nerd? Because I used to say to myself, I am book nerd. Also, like, it's super cool, I think, especially during the lockdown, because I think this where I at least I understand that this is the value, right? And maybe you can share with us, like, what currently, I know you are also contributing to one of the greatest libraries that I know, it's PM Library, and also Lena was on our podcast sometime before, so maybe you can share what's on your shelf currently, and how many books do you plan to read this year?
Well, I will start with the last question, if you don't mind. I'm being told to, you know, like, not put myself a number on how many I want to read, but I'm planning to read more than the last year, let's say. And last year I read around 40 books, so I would say the number. But let's say on average, I'm trying to read a book every week or week and a half. And you will say, oh, this guy doesn't really have a life or something, right? I think reading is a habit, you know, that you have to build. And it's actually, you don't have to think about, I don't sit for 2 hours and read, you know. And what I do is every time I have some space, some free time for reading, I try to, you know, get a book, and I try to have my book close to me and read as much as possible. And then writing these book reviews also help me in keeping the pace that I want to keep. And regarding the books I'm reading, I'm actually reading a couple right now. So
sure.
One of them is this one that is just, it's been published recently by Greg Bernstein. It's called Research Practice. And it's like a set of very short chapters written by different research professionals about different topics, and it's really interesting so far. I'm enjoying it a lot. And I'm also reading an essay about, it's called A Field Guide to Getting Lost, and it's more of a philosophical kind of book. I don't just read tech or product books. I think if there is a lot of value of reading novels or nonfiction that is not just tech related, so I try to always read different books, and you can see that on my Instagram profile. You will see that if you check it out, like, I'm not just reading tech books, even though most of them are somehow related to what I'm doing.
Yeah, I think your example is, your Instagram is pretty cool with, you know, like, explanation of every single book, and I really, like, love your Instagram watching, and also that gives me some book recommendations that I must read at some point. And, you know, like, besides the books, actually, is there any other materials that you, like, can try to consume? I don't know, maybe different podcasts or different good articles that are being, I don't know, streamed anywhere?
Not really. Like, I used to read a lot of Medium articles, but not really anymore. I believe that, so I think of articles and not podcasts maybe, but articles is more on, I have a problem, like, at least that's my mental model, you know, like, I have a problem or I want to know about something, and I go and search for it, and then I consume the information, right? In the other hand, a book for me, it's a pure exploration about a topic, and it's in depth, you know, and for a week or two or however, like, it takes you to read the book, you're immersed on that topic for a while, and that it's what I believe makes you, you know, like, more knowledgeable about something rather than picking a different article. I'm actually subscribed to some magazines, but I never read them, so I find myself just reading books more often. And podcast is something I used to consume as well in the past more often, especially when exercising, but I don't do it anymore. Maybe I listen to Donuts for Dollars sometimes, Steve Portigal's, or
what's wrong with UX people by Laura Klein and Kate. But yeah, it's not something that I normally do.
Everything seems like clear to me, and maybe the last suggestion to, you know, we explored today a lot of like topics on the product research, and still do you think that those product researchers are should be in the squad of product management people, or you think that it's like some different squad in the end?
No, like there are two ways that you can organize research in modern product teams, I believe. One of them is embedding, you know, different research at squad level. So you have the same, you have like, it's basically copy pasting what these designers do, you know, like for each designer, you have a researcher. So you have individual contributors at squad level, you will have leads at product design level, and then you have the head, right? Basically, that's one option. The cons of that option is that you are isolating quantitative experts with or data people from researchers, right? In a way, unless you also have, of course, data people embedded on the teams. But then the other option that you can already see in the big tech companies, so for example, like Spotify is a great example of this, is having an insights team, right? And this insights team is made of both data people and researchers, right? And in there, you can better triangulate methods, and you know, like you can fit each other, because if you think of the quantitative kind of data gives you the what, while the qualitative gives you the why, right? So you can actually build really solid knowledge relying on those two kind of profiles. But at the same time, what you're missing in there, so the cons would be that you're losing a little bit of track of what's going on at the tribe or squad level. So it's more difficult for you to uncover which questions might be the ones that the different teams are struggling to answer and will help them to keep going. So yeah, like there is no best one, but I would say that these are the two that are the ones that are being used and more helpful for the teams.
Well, super. If any founder are listening, or like product management people or any other founders are listening today, I guess this is something that they also like can think how they structure it. The final one, where can we find you? Are you on LinkedIn, Instagram, I don't know, Discord, Slack, or somewhere where people can reach you?
Yeah, like I'm actually LinkedIn anytime, Instagram anytime, of course. I'm actually also building a web page now that it's for mentoring, and I will also upload my writings and my talks and this podcast as well. That will be ready rather soon. In the meantime, of course, anytime you can reach out to me through Instagram or LinkedIn, and I check it on a weekly basis. So if I haven't answered you in that time, ping me again, because it means I forgot about it. I tend to forget a lot of stuff, so be patient.
Super cool, Josh, talk we had today, and thanks actually for being on the podcast. So we had amazing talk, and if someone just like I will rephrase that, Josh is senior product researcher at Hotjar, and also amazing person that reads a lot of books, and yeah, thanks for being here and your time. Appreciate that.
Thanks, Albi. It was fun. So my pleasure to be here. And yeah, see you around.